From the Society of American Archivists, this is Archives in Context, a podcast highlighting archival literature and technologies, and most importantly, the people behind them. Welcome to this episode of the Archives in Context podcast. My name is Nicole Milano, and I'm here with my co-host, Ashley Levine.
Hey, yeah.
Now, not to confuse our listeners, but today, Ashley and I are speaking with another Ashley, Ashley Farmer. Dr. Farmer received her PhD in African American Studies from Harvard University and is currently a historian of Black women's history, intellectual history, and radical politics at the University of Texas at Austin. She is the co-editor and curator of the Black Power series with Ibram X. Kendi, published with NYU Press. Dr. Farmer's scholarship has appeared in both academic and popular outlets, from the Journal of African American History to Vibe and NPR. Her 2017 book, Remaking Black Power, How Black Women Transformed an Era, examines how Black women's political, social, and cultural engagement with Black Power ideals and organizations helped to challenge sexism and redefine the meaning of race, gender, and identity in American life. Welcome, Dr. Farmer.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, Dr. Farmer, as with many historians, your scholarship relies on the availability of and access to archival material. In July of 2018, the Chronicle of Higher Education published your essay, Archiving While Black, which highlights the ongoing systematic racism researchers of color encounter in some archives. For those listeners who haven't read the essay, can you explain why you wrote it?
Yeah, so this is something that developed or kind of ruminated for years. I actually started writing it in 2015 when I was doing some archival research for my book, Remaking Black Power. And I was finishing up and realizing what a difference I was experiencing between the archives that I was going to in kind of rapid succession. And I kind of went through several drafts and I didn't really want to press send because I wanted to get the right tenor. But really what I was trying to get at was the discomfort that I felt being a Black woman in the archive. And the piece talks about that discomfort on a couple of different levels. The first one is just being one of the only people of color in an archive. And some of that has to do with the historical profession. That's not the archive's fault. But also some of that has to do with the ways in which we house archives and the ways in which kind of African-American archives are often segregated in their own archive, leading majority archives separate. And then also just kind of the architecture of the place, the ways in which I was surveilled, the suggestion that I didn't understand how the archive works, the procedures, locking up my stuff, et cetera, to, you know, how the actual environment that I had to archive in. There were several places where there were, to be quite honest, very racist pictures or caricatures of Black people on the walls, and everybody was just kind of sitting around like this was an okay or welcoming space to be there. So those are some of the issues that I was trying to get at, both the feeling of being in the space, but also kind of the presumption that I don't know how to be in the space or that I'm not legible in that space.
Okay, and to jump off of that, during your talk at the 2019 Society of American Archivists annual meeting, which followed the publication of this essay, we heard very clearly that you appreciate the work that archivists do, but also you kind of courageously came forward and offered us a valuable critique of our profession based on your experiences as a researcher, and you kind of touched on it in the previous question, but I'm wondering if you could kind of go into a little bit more depth of some of the difficult experiences you've had at archival repositories.
Yeah, so I just want to start by saying it was a delight to be at the SAA, and I was very excited to be welcomed into a space to talk about these things, even if they are difficult, because that's the only way we kind of move forward. So at that talk, I was talking about archiving while Black kind of on two different levels. The first was being Black in the space, kind of like I talked about before, but also studying Black women in that space. So I gave three examples that kind of combine these two points, and I'll just kind of give one as a summary of what I meant. So I'm currently working on a book about a woman named Queen Mother Moore, and she lived for nearly 100 years, but has no central archival repository. And some of that is just, you know, what happens, records get lost. But I also told a story about how near the end of her life, people really wanted to take her massive archive and donate it to a couple of different places. And they were refused by archivists, I think in large part because they didn't understand the importance of this particular archive. And then I talked about how almost 50 years later, when I go in the archive, it's not really designed with me in mind. And I try to find out things about somebody like Amore, somebody who's a, you know, everyday Black woman or a mm-hmm. grassroots organizer. I was told sometimes that I wouldn't find anything on her. One person told me that she sounded like a gadfly and not really somebody that would, anybody would have archives on and really asked me to move aside so that the next person could be helped. And that was both kind of very embarrassing and mortifying for me to kind of be brushed aside in that way. But I also think it speaks to this larger idea of, what we value and what we hold in archives.
I want to follow up on that. Continuing with your talk in SAA, you spoke about the fact that sometimes the people whom you're researching or their heirs ask you as a scholar of color to safeguard or steward their papers rather than have a conventional archive do that. Could you maybe talk about some of those experiences and perhaps what we can do as a profession or as individuals to support scholars of color who find themselves in this kind of situation?
Yeah, no, I love this question. So you're right. There are many activists who, because of their distrust of archives or also kind of their lack of ability to know how to process and care for these, and we could talk about kind of what kind of archival training doesn't allow for Black people to be in it in that same kind of space. They have these wonderful collections in their house. I just got a call actually from a woman last week that said she had 7 boxes just sitting in her attic. And I was like, oh my God, do nothing. I will be there soon.
I'll be there soon.
But the issue, what the question you're getting at though, is that when I go to that place and get them, I actually don't have the skill set with which to care for those archives in terms of preservation properly. But also, I should not be the only person seeing those, right? Those should be open and accessible to the public as they were. So I have a couple of suggestions for perhaps what we could do with the caveat that I am on the historian side of it, but hopefully they'll be generative. One thing I would love to see is perhaps some kind of community liaison. So there's this huge distrust, usually amongst communities for various reasons, about archives or institutions, particularly university archives. And while the archivists that are there now may have not participated in that, we can understand why the communities might have been distrustful in the past. But if there was someone that was kind of a steward from the community that the archivists train, and then could go talk to people in the community on their behalf to just explain what will happen in an archive, how it will be used, why it's observed, what their rights are, who owns this kind of stuff, et cetera, I think that would be helpful. When I was doing interviews for possibly to be archived for my first book, another issue came up about consent forms. And they were difficult for me to navigate. And I did not feel I had the wherewithal to really help explain to those who might be donating what to do with those as well. So from a historian training point, I could definitely use workshops on how to make sure that I'm being clear about what the archive is asking of me and of the people that I might be kind of functioning as a liaison between. And I think that might also help me be a person that could be that kind of interface between these people without adding to the distrust, you know, that is sometimes embedded in these conversations. So those would just be kind of two examples off the top of my head that I think could be useful.
Right. And so you just mentioned working together between archivists and scholars in terms of collection development for archives. But I'd also like to touch on working together in terms of access to those collections once they're on site. So you referenced earlier archival reference, essentially. And of course, most archivists take reading room security and the safeguarding of their historical collections very seriously. But as you've noted, some of the profession's standard procedures, such as checking IDs, can make some researchers feel very unwelcome. So do you have any ideas on how archivists can ensure the security of their collections without triggering a sense of unwarranted scrutiny?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough question, and I'm grateful that there's people thinking about this, even if we haven't figured it out entirely. I guess I want to kind of give a shout out to two people that I think are thinking about this or offering tips about this that I think are productive. One is Kelly Wooten, who works at the Duke Special Collections, and she has this great pamphlet that talks about how both archivists and patrons can interrogate the implicit bias in their procedures. So she has a great list of questions. One of them is what courtesies do white patrons and researchers, young and old, receive that others don't? And also which communities are allowed to use those spaces? And I think while it may not solve all of our problems, starting with those two questions are a great entry point for thinking about how we're surveilling certain people and not others. There's another great professor, Michelle Caswell at UCLA, and she has a great, I've seen it online, I guess it's kind of a poster pamphlet, identifying dismantling white supremacy in the archives, which I think was developed by both her and her students. And one of the things that they mentioned in that pamphlet is talking about not adding to the level of surveillance. So I understand that we've got to check things in and make sure things don't go missing, but in what ways can we talk about data collection of patrons so that you don't feel like you're adding to the level of surveillance that's going on? And also, how can we train archivists to make sure that they are not questioning somebody being in that space just because they look a certain way. So not a very satisfying answer, but I think there are really great people thinking about it. And I think some of those points are generative for maybe possibly coming up with solutions in the future.
And just a little shout out, we interviewed Michelle Caswell in season one of our podcast. So our listeners should go back to season one and hear more.
I've never met her, but I'm a great fan and share her work widely with historians that I'm training.
That's great. And of course, you mentioned Michelle Caswell and some others, but are there other archival practices or programs that you've encountered as a researcher that have made you feel very welcome among their community of users? And if so, what could other archival programs learn from them?
Yeah, so I'm thinking about this question. I thought about where were just sort of the common kind of actions that archivists did across maybe a couple of different archives that made me feel excited or welcome. Honestly, one was as simple as answering my emails before I came. You know, I mean, and out of respect for the archivists, I try to don't show up and demand a bunch of stuff without some warning that I'm coming. But you'd be surprised how often those emails don't go answered. And I don't want to pretend to understand all the demands somebody is under. But I do think that it does, especially if people are perhaps asking for things that aren't your main, you know, main collection of things people access most, perhaps, you know, taking a little bit more time for that. I also have had archivists literally just kind of walk around, you know, get back from behind the desk and just walk around and ask how people are doing or how their research is going. Or when, like, you know, I say, I'm going to take a break for lunch. You know, they'll say, you know, how are you finding what you need? Is there something else we can do? So there are little things, but it makes people feel like you are invested in what they've got going on there, that you're interested in perhaps finding things that may not be easily retrievable, and that most importantly, you're just kind of welcome in that space. So it's very small, but it goes a long way, making you feel like somebody belongs.
Going back to the presentation at SAA, you noted not only the challenges, but also possibilities. And I'm wondering, what recommendations could you provide to archivists, many of whom struggle with limited time and resources, who would like to gain a deeper understanding of the history of race and dynamics of racism in American institutions, including archives and their reference and descriptive services?
Yeah, I mean, so the good news is that we live in the future where there's a wonderful set of people, particularly archivists that I love that are writing about this. In the SAA talk, I talked about Jarrett Drake, who has a great online, I think it's on Medium, expanding the archives for Black Lives and traditional archival repositories. And some of the things that he talks about are just thinking about the biases embedded in a finding aid, how we categorize people, that turns out who we hide, who we value, who comes into our archive, who doesn't. Stacey Williams, who I think is now still at the University of Chicago, you have to correct me if I'm wrong on that, has a great set of short posts that are useful. I also think just checking out some of the documentary projects that are online, like Documenting the Now, just to see what can be done. And through seeing how people are organizing things differently in comparison with what we would consider a, you know, traditional archive with a big A, you start to see the ways in which people are trying to move around the institutional barriers that have put in place for Black people. But I do just want to emphasize that all of this really only goes so far. At some point, there has to be kind of a personal reckoning with the ways in which, you know, whether you knew it or not, at some point you know and you can't unknow, and how are you going to try to change that differently? Mm-hmm. But I also want to put in a point, you know, I don't want to come across as beating down on archivists without recognizing the ways in which historians need to do our part as well. And one of the things that I really brought up at the SAA was how much we rely on each other but don't talk to each other. you know? I would love and would be happy to participate in workshops that not only kind of shine a light on kind of the ways in which archives function, the things that historians don't know and understand about procedures and how they work, and perhaps in exchange, you know, to share some of my more of my views about the ways in which those can sometimes be marginalizing, even if it's not intentional. But I think even just setting up time to like have a lunch or talk with people that use the archive and really get to see what that's like. You know, it's limited time. It takes a small amount of time, but might go a long way towards envisioning your archival space differently.
As a follow-up, as far as creating relationships between academics and archivists, you teach at an academic institution. I'm wondering if you, in your class, integrate primary sources in a class, you bring a class of an archive and kind of what that experience has kind of meant for you.
So I have to say it's been very varied. And I talked about this a little bit in the Archiving What Black article. So, you know, by teaching about Black people, I tend to get self-selected more Black people or brown people in my classroom, right? I think that even in my intro class, I try to just introduce them to the archive, what it is, what it does, how it's a foundation, right? And I have, you know, I would never throw my students into the archive or spring them upon an archive without proper preparation and correspondence between that. But it has been varying as to how welcome my students are. I mean, without getting too details, I've seen eyes widen when a bunch of Black and brown kids come in there, you know? As if though there's something about their bodies that doesn't belong in that space or doesn't know how to follow the order of that space. So I try to do so, but I have to say that sometimes I find myself being very discouraged, but that doesn't mean I should stop. But it is something that I have encountered more resistance to than I thought I would. And that's across, I don't want to act like UT's, I mean, across multiple universities.
And I see spaces. Academia, yeah. Generally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the kids love it. I mean, my gosh, I mean, if you read the evals, I mean, the number one thing they talk about is getting to go and, you know, hold something from somebody that they studied, right? Or see the actual pamphlet or flyer. It really does transform them. And so, and also, you know, but they're, especially if they're university archives, they pay tuition there. It's their right to go and see those as much as anybody else is. Mm-hmm. But it's already a daunting space for students just because it is, you know? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I have to question whether I want to add that burden to my Black and brown students in that way.
Yeah. And it's so important to get students involved at a younger and younger age with primary sources and have them engage with that. I mean, it holds us accountable for so many things in society. So it's great that you're continuing to push forward and helping to contribute to that.
It's so cool.
I mean, we're a little biased, but we agree.
It's so cool. And this, and once they get in there and see it, they're transfixed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Dr. Farmer, we know we've kept the conversation fairly light so far, so we really want to get to the very deep question of this conversation. And that's, what superpower would you most like to have and why?
Ooh, okay, so this is going to be incredibly dorky, but nonetheless true.
You're talking to two archivists, don't worry.
Yeah, exactly.
How much dorkier can you get?
But like, I want to be able to fly around and drop down in any moment in space-time. Right? I'm invisible. I can't disrupt that moment anyway, but I can observe everything happening. Right? So imagine if you could like drop down when there were the dinosaurs and hop back up and then drop down in like Elizabethan England and then drop back up and then be in the civil rights movement. And I just think it would be the coolest thing to be able to just witness things as they transpire because all we have are the artifacts and relics. And it just, you know, I think historians are always trying to kind of elusively capture the essence of what was there. So I find myself wanting to be an invisible flying history time space.
you're the second academic to kind of say that too.
Oh, really? We should unite and try to figure this out.
Exactly.
I know, get the sounds and smells of history all at once.
I think that would be it.
Awesome.
Great. Well, Dr. Farmer, thank you so much for this thought-provoking conversation today. And hopefully this podcast will really help to spark continued conversations between archivists and scholars. So thank you, thank you, thank you. We appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's really great to have these conversations.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Peace.
You've just listened to an episode of Archives in Context, the official podcast of the Society of American Archivists.
Members of the podcast team include Bethany Anderson, Chris Burns, Ashley Levine, Nicole Milano, Anna Trammell, and Colleen McFarlane Rademacher. Opinions expressed in this podcast are our own and are not reflective of a particular institution. Be sure to like us on iTunes if you enjoyed what you heard, and join us again next time.